where are we going on this Jaguars coaching search? I mean, what are you guys like necessarily watching for?
I don't look. Yeah, I think in the end it's going to be – I mean, there are only so many guys that are going to move the needle in terms of excitement. It's not going to be one of these wild card John Gruden types or anything like that. I don't think it'll be Tom Coughlin, ultimately. I've said that all along, even though I said he'd be the top guy on my list. It's probably going to be a Mike Smith type guy or, you know, it's probably one of the names we've already heard.
Yeah,
I would guess. But then again, we didn't hear the Gus Bradley name until it became the name, right? So
right.
It's a different circumstance. I don't know if they can afford to go with a complete unknown wild card, but you got to go with the guy you think is the best who is also interested in taking your job and you know, or having the job here in Jacksonville.
And we're going to have a lot of fans that over the course of this week are going to be asking what's the latest on what's going on. Well, if they want to interview Josh McDaniels and Shanahan, if that's going to be part of the process, and it's clearly going to be, then you're not going to hear really much until this weekend when they've had an opportunity to talk to those guys. They may have a guy like Mike Smith in, you know, that kind of thing, but until they have an opportunity to even talk to all these guys, there's not going to be a whole bunch on the news front as far as what the Jags are doing.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You know, I like looking at these sites or analysts that will, you know, project what they think is the more attractive of the jobs. Well, we're going to find out, right? I mean, we've only got a certain amount of pegs for a certain amount of holes. Everybody wants McDaniels. Everyone wants Shanahan. Well, who do these guys choose? There's your answer, right?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And McDaniels isn't going to be a candidate for Denver. So if,
right.
And,
right.
you know, the polls that are out there are saying Jacksonville may be the second best job that's available.
Then they should
really
have Josh
is.
McDaniels if they want him, right?
Right. And I don't know. There's a report that came out today that Vance Joseph is the leader in the clubhouse for the Denver job as soon as Miami gets eliminated from the playoffs. So if he really is, then maybe Shanahan's still in the market too.
Would you rather have Shanahan or McDaniels?
Me, I'd rather have Shanahan.
I like Shanahan. One thing Shanahan did with Matt Ryan, who it didn't even think like he needed to do that, is he's moved him out of the pocket a lot more. To the point that he wasn't real comfortable doing it initially. I think that's the key to salvaging Blake Bortles is to get him out of the pocket. I don't think Blake Bortles is ever going to be able to go step back, or and maybe not ever. He seems very uncomfortable stepping in that pocket, surveying the field, and throwing an accurate pass. Amazingly, he seems like one of those guys, the ball's more on the money if he's moving than if he's static. So, you know, that aspect of Shanahan's philosophy appeals to me if Blake Bortles is your quarterback moving forward.
Yeah, I just like the fact that, look, I just think anybody who goes into New England is going to have success with Tom Brady. I don't think of that as a factor, and I think what he's done, Shanahan's done, to take Matt Ryan to the best place he's ever been offensively and that team offensively, they're still bad defensively. They still give up a ton of points this year, and for them to be the number two seed, I think that's the vast majority of that's on their offense this year. So I think he's taken Matt Ryan to a higher level than he's ever been. I think Tom Brady's been at this level for quite a while, you know. And
yeah.
I think Josh McDaniels is a mediocre to below average head coach when he was a head coach.
Yeah, so. I'm not big on McDaniels, and it might not be fair. I mean, Bill Belichick probably wasn't making everybody jump up and down when he got his second crack at being a head coach after what happened in Cleveland. But even he was better in Cleveland than McDaniels was in Denver. But McDaniels also didn't get much time out there, so. You know, who knows what a second opportunity will do. All right, boys, it's Jaguars Today. Starts right now.
All right, we'll see you. There he goes, Jeff Prosser, along with Dan Hickett. It's the Drill Weekday Mornings from 6 to 10 right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. John Osier will be along today as well. Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday starts right now.
With the 36th pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select T.J. Yeldon, running back, Alabama.
He's a really good back in the SEC that played in a pro-style offense, and we just felt like that he wouldn't last to the third round. And sure enough, you know, we got texts after from a few teams that saying, hey, we were going to take him in the second round. And so let's not risk it if we felt like that we can get a guy that could come in and make a difference for us.
Shotgun for Bortles. Yeldon, the running back, dropping. Bortles looks, pump fakes. Pump fakes again, rolls left now. Gets away from a defender, fires to the back of the end zone. That is going to be caught for the touchdown. T.J. Yeldon in the back of the end zone, and Jacksonville has taken the lead. Yeldon, the running back, on third and short. The give to T.J. He is hit at the line of scrimmage. He broke free. Inside the 20-yard line. Inside the 10-yard line. T.J. Yeldon reaching for the goal line. Touchdown, Jacksonville. T.J. Yeldon, second and third effort for the score.
Wow, what a great individual run, but also a great job of the guys up front staying on blocks, because T.J. bounced to his right, Nothing was there. Bounced back to his left. And nobody was coming free for the Buffalo Bills. And T.J. Yeldon took it to the house.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Jaguars Today just kicking off on this Metro Rooter Wednesday. John Osher will be along in a few minutes. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. And not that I want to get too far down that path, Tony, because Dallas doesn't play this weekend, and we can talk about all the playoff matchups upcoming today, and we'll get into the Hall of Fame finalists as well. Congrats to Tony Boselli.
No doubt.
I don't get the argument, and I get it, you know, that's Jeff Prosser's point of view. He's allowed to have it, and he's probably not the only one who holds it, but you got a guy who's never had much postseason success in Tony Romo, and to expect that he's going to have the greatest success of his career and be more likely to lead you to the Super Bowl when he's never done that before in a season, basically after 2 years of not playing football, which is where he is right now, I just don't see why that's reasonable to expect that he'd be the better option than Dak Prescott right now.
I agree with you. I don't think he's the better option. I think there are certainly teams that are stuck in a spot right now in these playoffs that would probably rather have Tony Romo than whatever they're running out there.
No question about that.
Like, Dallas is a different situation, though, because Dak's been playing it all year. Like you said, Tony hadn't been healthy for a couple of years. And when you look at Romo's playoff history, the game against Seattle where he dropped the snap on the field goal, that was 2006. Dallas has made the playoffs four times in Romo's career.
Right.
They lost that game in 2006. 2007, they were the two seed in the NFC playoffs. The Giants beat the Bucs the week before, came into Dallas, beat them 21-17. The Giants went the next week to Green Bay, and then they eventually beat the Patriots that year, too. In 2009, they made the playoffs. They beat Philadelphia. That was kind of was it Jeff Garcia, maybe quarterback in that team in 2009? I thought there was a quarterback injury for Philadelphia going into the playoffs that year, but I can't remember. And then they lost to the Favre-led Minnesota Vikings badly the next week in the divisional round of the playoffs. And then in 2014, when they were 13-3, they beat Detroit, but there was the controversy with the defensive holding call in that game. And then the next week, there was the controversy with did Dez catch it against the Green Bay Packers. So they had back-to-back weeks where 1 week they probably should have lost to Detroit,
right,
and the next week they probably should have won against Green Bay.
Right, but if they should have lost the one they should have lost, they never would have played against Green Bay.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at it in that game that you're talking about against Philadelphia. Michael Vick threw a touchdown pass, and Donovan McNabb threw a touchdown pass.
Ooh.
So I don't know. And Vick threw his early in the game, and McNabb threw his in the fourth quarter. So
I remembered something weird.
That is definitely weird, but that was the case back in the day. Look, I get it. If you were, you know, if you're going to throw a hypothetical out there, if it's one thing if you said, who at the beginning of the season, if these teams lost their quarterback, which one of these guys would they take? Well, sure, they'd take Tony Romo. But right now, I would take Tony Romo. You'd take Tony Romo at the beginning of the season because you didn't know what Dak Prescott would turn into. But if they had played with Dak Prescott all season long, how many people think that getting Tony Romo would be a better option at that point in time? Or, you look, I just think a guy who's been around, has been experienced, he's been in the National Football League, been in a lot more quarterback meetings than Dak Prescott has, could adapt to going into running somebody's team for the next 3 weeks better than maybe a rookie could who's been in one system in the NFL. But with the Dallas Cowboys, he's been in that system all season long, and he's done remarkably well. And, you know, you could talk about, is this the best Dallas team? I think in large part, some of it is because Dak Prescott has been so good with the football this year. Yeah, they've got Ezekiel Elliott, and he's been fantastic. But again, I think Dak's more the MVP of that team this year. I think ultimately they probably cost each other votes. I don't know if all five of those guys that Jeff mentioned get votes, because again, a month ago I would have said Matt Stafford would have gotten my vote. If I only had one vote, I'd probably give that to Matt Ryan right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys doesn't get a vote, because I'm not sure, you know, how many people outside of Dallas are voting for one of those guys, because I do think they're going to split it up a little bit. I'd be surprised if Brady, Ryan, and Rodgers didn't all receive votes.
Probably, especially the way that Green Bay finished the season,
yeah,
as hot as they are.
If it was a second half award, I think Rodgers would probably win it. But it's not. It's a full season.
Right. It certainly could be. And I think you look at Matt Ryan's numbers. Look, it could go any way you want to determine it. And part of that is figuring out what your definition of MVP is. Is it just the guy that had the best statistical season or the guy who is, quote, most valuable if you took him off the roster? And John Osher is not the MVP, despite the fact that he's pointing at himself right now. MVPs show up on time, Tony. All right?
We're on, Brady didn't.
This is a new year. All right? This is,
hey,
this
hey did Tom Brady show up
did
on time?
Did he win the MVP?
I don't know. Maybe.
To be determined.
So,
but you're talking about it. I just don't want to be shoved to the side.
I'm
tired of being shoved to the side.
If you had been suspended for the first 10 minutes of the program, you would have had an excuse. Did someone drop you off at work today?
No.
No? Did you drove your own car?
You're right.
All right, there you go.
I stink.
Much better. All right, today, fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is in honor of Tony Boselli. We put the link in both the tweet and on the Facebook post when we asked the question, which five finalists would get your vote for election in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Only five guys off of the 15-man finalist list can go in, and Tony Boselli is one of those finalists. We'll go through the 15 today and try to determine who we think is the most deserving. You can bet I'm voting for 71, and I hope he does get in. I don't know if he's technically one of the five most deserving, but we'll go through the list. I think after LaDainian Tomlinson and Terrell Owens, it's wide open as far as I'm concerned after that, but I don't know if the Hall of Fame voters will feel the same way. So we'll talk about that today. If you want to get in and talk about any aspect of Jaguar football, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Hit us up on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at John Osher. And of course, as we mentioned, the Jaguars Facebook page up and running as well. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday live at Everbank continues in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Thank you. Good.
All right, Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you're along with us on this Wednesday morning. First one of the 2017 calendar year. Jags not getting ready for a playoff game this weekend.
No?
No, not John.
Am I on?
You need to
yeah, you're
get
on.
Caught
I can't
up.
Hear a thing.
John thinks he's funnier than he is, I think, on
can you really not hear anything?
On an average scale. You really can't hear?
I can't hear a thing. That's all right.
Is your headset plugged in?
Yes, it is.
How about that? Talk to Joe Fortunato,
Faulty Bose headphones.
Director of radio broadcasting.
That's fine.
And things here with the
it's probably best
Jaguars.
I don't hear myself.
It probably is. It could be best that you don't hear me, too.
That's fine.
What about Boselli making the Hall of Fame finalists as a surprise to you? It seemed like there was some momentum for him. I think the biggest thing nationally he had going for him was when Gil Brandt wrote the article when the first list of semifinalists came out and thought he was
hurt.
One of the six most deserving guys.
Right.
I don't know if that influenced the whole field, but it certainly makes you take a more critical look at the situation, I think.
Well, the good news for Tony, and I kid Tony a lot, I mean, but absolutely, I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I think it's almost criminal that it's his 11th year, and this is the first time he's been this close, but whatever. It's a good sign that sort of thing is starting to get written. I think it's more of a sign of an overall momentum for Tony than it is voters seeing that article and reacting to it. The more this time last year, you started hearing more and more people who had talked to different voters. And I know a lot of people on the committee, a lot of people on the voting committee, you started hearing a lot more talk in his favor and I think that will benefit him once he gets into the room, to use that term, and they start voting. Some candidates, when you look back on their careers and talk to people, you hear, oh, okay, maybe. I think he's one that, as he is dusted off and really examined, and you start talking to people who played against him, will be one that his case gets better and better the more he's discussed.
I think even if you compare him to a guy like Terrell Davis, who's also one of the finalists, Terrell Davis's peak may have been better than Tony's because he was league MVP,
at a more high-profile position.
Understood. But, I mean, when you talk about
he was as good a player as Terrell Davis at his own position, though.
Terrell Davis, one of six guys have a 2,000-yard season? I think Terrell Davis's best season is probably better than Tony Baselli's best season. Now, that's my opinion.
Right.
Okay, He had two great years. Right. He had two pretty good years, and he had two not-so-great years. With Tony, I thought it was more of a consistent excellence is my point that I'm trying to make on that.
Yeah, I would put Tony as the best left tackle in the golden age of left tackles. I think he's best player in his position when he played. It's the best time for that position in league history. You had Rofe, Ogden, Pace, all around that. Walter Jones would be the one guy that I would say maybe clearly better than Tony. But I would say Munoz and Jones are the only two guys I can think of who, consensus-wise, would be better.
But all those guys are going to be in the Hall of Fame.
True.
And that's, at the end of the day, all those guys. And to me, the other big benefit, if
you're
really...
You can't talk about the great left tackles ever without talking about Tony.
Correct.
That's what we'll eventually get him in.
Okay. To me, the comparison to Dwight Stevenson, the fact that he actually started more games than Dwight Stevenson, nobody questions whether Dwight Stevenson's a Hall of Famer.
He was a tough get when it first happened, though.
He may have been, but now the fact that he's in.
Right, exactly.
And you look at it and say, well, if he's in, what is the argument against Tony Baselli?
Very true.
There is no argument against Tony Baselli. To me, that holds up.
And that's why I think the dust-off theory is, I think for a while there was sort of this consensus, and you've talked about it a lot, that short career, sort of forgotten about, sort of put aside a little bit, if you know what I mean, among the voters' minds. Now that he's back, and now that people start sort of looking, and as he said last night when I talked to him, this is the first time his career among a lot of these voters has really been examined. Before, it's been one-offs. Maybe a voter appears on Mike Dempsey's radio show and is asked about Tony, and he's got to give an answer, but he really hasn't thought about it that much. You know how that goes. Well, now he's going to be kind of forced to think about it. He's going to be forced to talk to people at the Super Bowl. Hey, what do you think of Baselli? Okay, but and then there's more conversation. You get more in voters' minds. That matters. I've seen that process at Super Bowls when I covered them, of the writers really try to talk to a lot of different writers. They try to talk to a lot of different people who played against them. And that's where I think Tony's case will gain strength, is the more you talk to people who played against him and were around in the league at that time, the better his reputation is going to get, because he was that good.
And I do agree with the guys this morning saying that this is not a year where you've got three or four slam dunk guys. I do think I don't know who's considered a slam dunk guy by this panel. LaDainian Tomlinson should be a slam dunk.
Yes.
To me, Terrell Owens should be a slam dunk. In fact, he should already be in the Hall of Fame. The fact that he's not is just flat silly.
And
the
LT is a slam dunk far more than TD. Far more than Terrell Davis.
Oh, no, yeah. It's not even a question. I mean, Terrell Davis has been through this process a few times.
It feels like, and the voting shouldn't take place this way, but there's an element of this. It feels like Terrell Owens probably, I guess, paid his price last year, whatever that means, for...
for being one of the top three receivers of all time.
No, for the locker room stuff and that. But... I'd be very surprised if T.O. and L.T. aren't in this year, which leaves three spots. And the others,
I think Kurt Warner's got a really good chance.
I do, too. But
because he's been a finalist now three times, and he's got a lot of cachet. He's got a lot of name recognition. He's still out. He's still visible.
Right.
And I think these things matter.
They do.
Should they matter?
Intrinsically.
Maybe not.
No, but
I think that when you're in the public's consciousness, the football public's consciousness, I think that helps.
I think every voter would probably try to keep that out as much as he could. I think realistically, name recognition and that sort of thing has to sway you. I mean, and I think we see evidence of it. Name recognition certainly sways you. It's one reason Baselli hasn't been in the room yet. The absurd thing to me, Fred Taylor's not even on the preliminary list yet.
Right.
And what? Certainly name recognition in some cases. There is a process to getting in. And the good news for Tony is now he's at the doorstep, and I just believe that his credentials will be enough now that this next stage of the process I don't think will take nearly as long as the last stage.
I hope not. I don't know who's coming up next year, you know, the new guys, because that's what always kind of throws a wrench into some of these situations, what new crop of players that are almost no-brainers that have to get in will pop up and push you further down the line. But
I don't think it'll come to this, Mike. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I don't think it'll come to this, but I think getting in the room first go-round, meaning that first 15-year period, being a topic of conversation, even if for some reason it wouldn't happen in this modern era, I think being in the room in the modern era would benefit if it has to come down to senior committee, so to speak. You follow me? Because he would have been...
Right, he would have been vetted more thoroughly and discussed more and been more on the mind.
I certainly think it would be a case of, okay, well, circumstances didn't allow it then. Hey, we got to get him in.
I don't think it'll get that. I agree.
I think in the next few years,
there'll be... Maybe this year, honestly, when you because there's some fast rising momentum, I think, for Tony this year. Honestly, this may sound crazy. I don't think it hurts the fact I listen to Tony. His Westwood One schedule coming up. He's going to be in the booth for the next 2 weeks, you know, and these national broadcasts, which are the only game being played when they're being played on Sirius radio, you know, that the official radio of the NFL. He's going to be on the sideline for one of the championship games and the Super Bowl working there, you know, so he's going to be more present. And again, is that like to me, Kevin Mawai's got no chance to get into Hall of Fame. Not this time around, maybe one day and maybe be a Veterans Committee guy. I don't feel that about Tony, though he's a first time finalist. I think he has a much better chance than some of the guys that maybe even have been finalists before.
As I think you said earlier, it never hurts to be in the consciousness.
No. Let's go to the phones. If you want to get in today, any aspect of Jaguar football or the NFL at large, you're welcome to talk about it. 641-1010. Let's go to Mike on the south side to lead us off this morning. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Hey, John. How you doing, Tony?
Yeah. Listen, good. What's up, man?
Listen. I need to talk Jaguars for a second, if you would. And I think we can all agree with you. I listen to you every day regularly. I mean, I think we can all agree. The Jaguars could have won this division this year with a quarterback and a running back. So I'm going to play general manager for a minute, okay? I want you to think outside the box. I think it's the time the Jaguars, for the first 20 years they've been in football, they need to start taking a chance here. And I think this is the year because I think that's all they're only a quarterback and a running back away. So let's do it. And this draft, If I was Caldwell right now, they're not going to take Coughlin. I think they're going to take McDaniels. So with McDaniels, what I would do, I think he's not going to be happy with Bortles. I would trade Bortles right now. I think Cleveland would give you their third pick in the first round for Bortles. They wouldn't give you the first two picks, but I think they might give you their last one. And I would trade Bortles to Cleveland because Cleveland definitely needs a quarterback. Okay? And then I would take Cook with my third pick, a running back, and then I'd go get that free agent, either Romo or Garoppolo or a quarterback. This is the time, man.
Mike, I got to stop you here. Mike, you there's thinking out of the box, and then there's fact errors. Garoppolo's not a free agent. As of now, Romo's not a free agent, right? I mean, these things that you're creating all these conditions to – that aren't there. They don't exist. You know, that you can't just go get Garoppolo or Tony Romo. And if Tony Romo has a choice to go to the Denver Broncos,
that's the problem,
or the Jacksonville Jaguars, who is he going to feel is closer to winning him a championship with his limited time left?
Even if he's incorrect, that would be the feeling. And that would be, I mean, that'd be everybody's feeling. Broncos have a defense that got him a Super Bowl last year. Of course you would choose Denver right now. It's not a knock on Jacksonville. It's just the reality of Denver.
Absolutely.
Right.
And to say that we're going to pick McDaniels now and McDaniels won't want Bortles, so let's trade Bortles now. You don't know, A, that McDaniels would want to come here, that he's the guy that they're going to settle on, and how he'll feel about Bortles. And so to trade
away, was he saying you would get for Bortles? Third round pick?
How many Cleveland first round picks are there? Do they have three? I thought they had two.
I think they had two
first rounders, and then they have the. So again, one another fact there. They don't have three first round picks, right?
So top of the second round,
right? There's the 36th overall pick.
You're not getting that for Bortles either.
Yeah. Right? Why would they give you that for Blake Bortles right now?
Right. Realistically, right now, I would be stunned if you got a top of the second round pick for Bortles. Now, I'm not saying he couldn't eventually outplay that, and maybe last year you could have. But right now, it would be a tough sell.
I mean, you know, they're thinking out of the box, but you got to still deal with basic reality? Can any of these things happen individually? Maybe a couple of them could. Are they likely to all be possible to even pull off if you wanted to?
No. Yeah, after those theories, it might be time to get back in the box.
Or if you're going to swing big, right, the idea of swinging big is you're going to give up your fourth overall pick to go get Garoppolo. That's swinging big. If you think that that guy is going to be the future of the quarterback position in Jacksonville, if you bring in McDaniels and he feels sure of it, that's swinging, right? You may not be swinging at the right pitch, but you're swinging.
And that would be one that you could make. I'm not saying I would make the argument for it, but it would be a conversation to have.
Right. It would almost, to me, only be feasible if you did hire McDaniels, that he felt like he's willing to put his neck on the line. Because right, typically, you know, the coach comes in and he inherits the quarterback or they draft a new quarterback, he's going to be given a grace period. If you say, Josh McDaniels, we're hiring you, yeah, go out and spend your first-round pick and a fifth-round pick. Remember, the price is supposed to be a first and a fourth, right, was what the reporting was. Well, that may change if that first is a top-five pick. So let's say you give up just the fourth overall pick to get Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, now Josh McDaniels has put his neck firmly on the chopping block under those circumstances.
And you know what? If it's Josh McDaniels, and I don't really get the feeling it will be, but
Why not?
Because I think it's going to be Mike Smith is my gut. But again, I'm not saying I'm hearing that it won't be Josh McDaniels. I'm just saying that if I'm sitting there guessing and throwing darts at my board,
Not because of anything McDaniels specific,
no.
More because you think this other candidate in the case.
I just
kind
of feel
Smith
like that's how it's going to work out in the long run. I mean,
right,
you know, and
I think that's probably the consensus right now. I think he's a safe answer if you were to project who. I'm not saying that's the wrong answer.
Right. No, but, I hear you.
You know, like I don't, as much as I'd like Tom Coughlin to be the pick, I don't get any sense that it's going
that
to be Tom
right
Coughlin. You
but
know?
If it is McDaniels, and, you know, percentage-wise, I think there's a fairly good chance, just not as good a chance as Mike Smith. If it is McDaniels, you know what? And the idea of trading for Garoppolo for what we just talked about is on the table, I say go for it, because if you're going to hire him as your coach, be all in with what's going on.
Right.
Go after it.
Right. Exactly.
Don't halfway it.
Right.
If you're going to do it, all in, bring back the motto from 2013 and be all
but
in.
But you better be sure, because you trade the fourth overall pick for a quarterback.
Well, if you're Blake sure on McDaniels, then you better be sure on what he wants.
Well, I understood, but coaches don't always make the best personnel decisions either.
Right. But
right?
I would say if he wants that and you don't like that idea, then he ain't the right guy.
Possibly.
Right. Right?
Right. And he's got to – and look, any quarterback he's that you
I don't even know if he
for,
wants that.
I don't either, because that's the thing. He may say, you know what, Jimmy Garoppolo is a good serviceable quarterback
right
who can manage an offense, but is he worth giving up a top five pick for? He may not feel that
right
way.
If he comes in, I mean, I have no idea, but you would think if he comes in banging the table saying this is the guy and it costs you what we're talking about, then you almost have to do it because this is the direction.
Right.
Give it the right shot if you're going to do
but
it.
But if you do that, Blake Bortles is no longer – even in a competition. I'm not spending the fourth pick on a veteran quarterback to put him in a competition to see if he can beat out Blake Bortles. That's not an alternative I want to go down.
Right.
I don't want to go down that road. If I'm going to trade for a veteran quarterback, it's one thing to draft a guy at number four and say, are you ready to beat out Bortles, and you have a competition. If you give the fourth pick for a veteran quarterback, he needs to be the starter from day
one. He's going in, and I should know, he's going to his fourth year, Jimmy?
Garoppolo should be
going
third? I think it's his fourth.
Okay.
I think he's got one more year. I think he's played three seasons or been in
three or four, whatever. If you're trading for a third or fourth year veteran.
Right, that he should know because he's been there. He's worked with him.
Then it's time to get the horse out of the barn.
Let's get Dell and Warner Robbins up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Dell.
Hey, morning, guys. I just had a quick question. Most of the coaching talks are mainly focused on Josh McDaniels, Mike Smith, but I wanted to see what you guys' opinion is on Todd Haley. I know he can't be interviewed right now since, they don't have a bye week. But
right.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on him as a serious candidate for the Jags, and I'll take comments off the air.
Sure. I don't know why he wouldn't be in there with this ilk of guys that we're talking about, right? Former coaching experience. He is a great offensive mind. At times, he's been described as tough to get along with. You know, okay, you know, whatever. I'm sure Tom Coughlin was described that way plenty of times.
I do a show with you, and
Exactly. You're brutal. And you keep showing up at least once a week.
Yeah. Sometimes late. Time.
Right.
Sometimes when I want to.
You know, and maybe it's as simple as that, John, that they are playing this week, that opportunity. Yeah. But Vance Joseph's name is coming up in these conversations. And teams, we're finding out that teams want to talk to Vance Joseph. We're not hearing anyone wanting to talk to Todd Haley. That doesn't mean they don't, but we're not hearing that.
You know, you would think part of it is, look, there are candidates we can talk to now. McDaniels and Haley sort of feel similar in that way. Offensive coordinator, previous head coach. They've got, I think, what they think is a pretty good list. Smith, McDaniels.
Shanahan.
Call, you know, my guess is that the group, Kahn, Caldwell, Lamping, the bunch who's making these decisions, like their group. And go ahead and interview that group. And since Haley really can't be interviewed right now, it is a flaw in the system and has been for a long time.
But for instance, Denver's going to interview Vance Joseph after this game. Okay. And if Miami loses, Vance Joseph is going to fly to Denver. If Miami wins, they're going to Denver to meet with Vance Joseph this weekend.
Right.
And interview him right away. And we know that now. So here's a guy who can't be interviewed this week.
Right.
But we're still hearing it. You know, I just get the sense that Todd Haley's not a very hot name in coaching circles right now. I wouldn't have a problem with it. You know,
I agree.
The surface of it. I don't know much personally about Todd Haley, but I'd love to have a great offensive mind come in here and have his hands on the offense. I honestly, if you bring in an offensive-minded coach and he's got experience calling plays as a coordinator, I hope that that's what he's going to do when he gets here.
Again, I didn't even mean I shouldn't have left Shanahan off that list of, you know, that same kind of group. Shanahan, McDaniels, Todd Haley. Again, you almost wonder if the Shanahan and McDaniels presence in that group isn't sort of pushing Haley down.
Possibly.
And maybe that's the reason that he's not in that group. That coupled with the fact that he's working this week.
Right. All right. We'll take a time out here. Keep the phone lines open to you at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osier here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I'm Dan Scuda of your Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right. A couple of nuggets from the world of social media. By the way, you can hit us up on the Jaguars Today Facebook page and on the Twitter handles, particularly today. The question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. We included a link in our post this morning to the list of the 15 Hall of Fame finalists. That includes Tony Boselli. Congrats to Big Bo.
Absolutely.
For getting in there. And it'll be good to see him. Tony, I suspect that means he'll be hanging around in Houston. The fact that he's working the game.
Yeah.
And he's a finalist. Hopefully, we'll get to. I hope we can book him on Radio Row. Will we be able to score an interview with Tony Boselli?
I would hope so.
Tony's his name carries a lot of weight. Football players,
his body
helmets.
Used to.
They used to. Football players wear helmets. Tony Boselli is not instantly recognizable nationally, right? It's always a treat for Tony and I on those rare occasions when a Jaguar-related person comes around Radio Row. And we get first dibs on them, and people are scrambling to figure out, who are they talking to, right? Who is that guy with the funky haircut? That's Alan Hearns, all right? You'll know who he is soon enough. And so that's fun. So hopefully we'll get Boselli in there, and there'll be a lot of buzz for that. I look forward to that week. So you can weigh in on that. Here are a couple of nuggets. Greg Allman of the Tampa Bay Times put out, he said, defensive penalties under Mike Smith. Only two Bucs players on defense had more than two accepted penalties all season long. Mike DiRocco follows up. Jaguars had nine players with more than two accepted penalties on defense this year. That doesn't mean if Smith comes in, they won't have any penalty issues whatsoever. And Mike Smith is one of those ones interviewing for the Jaguars job. I think this is more of an off-air conversation. We just continued into the break. You like the idea of the kind of the CEO coach who oversees everything below him and isn't necessarily as hands-on as, say, Sean Payton is with the offense in New Orleans.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll be up front. The reason for that is the successful 10 years that I've been around, that's what it's been.
That's a good reason.
Coughlin was that way in Jacksonville. Dungy was that way, and so was Jim Caldwell when he stepped in for 2 years. Those are the playoff teams that have won Super Bowls, gotten to championship games that I've covered. And those coaches had a very overseeing demeanor, if that's, you know, and a very presidential demeanor for the most part. Is that the only way it can work? No. But the more of that you have, I guess the more comfort level I've seen and have with it.
That's why, to me, after Coughlin, I like Sean Payton, because I do like, if you're going to bring in an offensive-minded coach, right, or a defensive-minded right. coach for that matter, and that is where he has built his reputation, his acumen, to not have him call plays and to be that CEO guy, I think kind of neuters one of the reasons right. I'd be interested in that guy. Sean Payton's both. Learned how to balance both.
Right, and again, when I say what I just said about what I'm comfortable with, who cares what I'm comfortable with? Sean Payton made it work.
Exactly. So, I mean, right. But
so I'm not dissing that. That
but
can work.
I agree with your point. Like, if you hire Kyle Shanahan, I think it's a lot to ask a first-time head coach to oversee everything and, oh, yeah, call the plays right. on game day on top of that. And otherwise, then, why do I want Kyle Shanahan? Well, the reason I want him is because look at what he did when he was hands-on right. with that Atlanta offense. He got the best out of Matt Ryan and company right. that we've seen maybe in that tenure right. in Atlanta. And if you're going to bring him in here and not put him in that role that has made him the right. guy that's on your radar, what are you doing?
Now, I don't want to rewrite history here. Coughlin was pretty involved in the offense.
He was,
so,
right.
So, I mean, whenever you sort of talk about what a head coach is, you're talking in generalities when really the specifics of the matter was there were times when the Jags ran for 375. Guess what? Tony Dungy was in the defensive meetings the next week. And
right, taking more of a hands-on role.
Right, so it's not – just because we on radio sit here and say, well, this guy's this kind, it sort of varies based on need, based on situation, even year to year. So, but just over – I just like a head coach, and Sean Payton has this, a leadership CEO demeanor. I kind of like that, and I think players kind of respond to it.
That's fine. And yeah. you can be both.
Yeah.
I just think it's
tough to balance it young.
It is when they're young, right? Yeah. And I don't think – for me, I don't have the patience to let a guy learn on the job for the next 2 years
right.
or so. You know.
Now, Kyle Shanahan's been around the NFL a long time.
Understood.
And he's what, ninth year as a coordinator, I think, is this at? So good chance being around his father for a long time. Sharp learning curve of learning from mistakes, maybe knowing how to do it. And the great ones, and there are great ones out there who are just great at this. If that's what he is, then he may be able to do it.
Maybe. Right. I just...
Sean Payton is young when he took
it. Right. Doesn't mean I'm right.
Right.
Right. And, but
I don't think you rule it out for that reason, but I do think.
Oh, sure.
It says on Frank's show last night.
Who?
I do. Frank Frangie, you know. I don't think it rules out a guy who doesn't have that sort of demeanor or who you haven't seen that from yet. But I think there will be a strong part. When you're sitting in an interview room with the guy, I think it's something that Shad Khan, Dave Caldwell will be looking for of, okay, he doesn't have that head coaching experience. Let me look at this guy and what do I see in him that I believe that he will get that fast, that element.
And Shanahan may be an exception to this rule because, like you right. said, his dad, he's been on his staff. He's probably had more discussions about what it takes to be a head coach than, you know, since a very young age.
And he may have something inside of him that's there that Khan sees.
Absolutely. He
and
could.
If that's the case.
And you know what? He may have a young. Offensive-minded guy that he likes that would be capable of implementing the system the way he sees fit on offense. And
sure.
Whereas it's basically Kyle Shanahan's offense. All right, you're going to be the guy who's calling the plays. If I need to step in, right. I have that ability to do that. But, you know, I'm sure, look, all these guys, if they're smart, and they are,
right.
A guy like Kyle Shanahan has been around the block with his dad's experience and his own to know he's got a list. Whenever he interviews, I'm right. sure he's going to go, here's my choices A, B, C, and D for offense coordinator, defense coordinator, and all the key posts on the coaching staff.
As much as we talk about it, and as much as we will talk about it over the coming days, everybody sort of wants the pattern and the structure that works, right? There isn't a magic formula, because if there was, everybody'd be using it. You've got to find the right guy. And you've got to figure out what you think is going to work. and there's not a right formula. There's not, okay, offensive coach with a coordinator, 55 years old, who's done it before. If it was a guaranteed formula, everybody'd be using it.
Right. Look, Mike Smith had a ton of success offensively in Atlanta.
Right.
Because he had good offensive coordinators, and he had talent to work with. And it's an amazing combination.
Right.
You've got some talent.
Right.
You got guys who have half a brain conducting things, so you can have success.
John Fox was successful in Denver. Denver and Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Not this year with the, you know, so it's, it, if there was a tried true formula that guaranteed success, then the highest bidder would go get it every year and it would always win the Super Bowl.
All right, let's take a timeout and come back with this Dayton football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. At some point in the next hour, we'll give you our preferred five guys, not necessarily who we think is most deserving, but who we would vote for whatever our own personal reasons are out of the 15 finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You can weigh in with yours as well at 641-1010 on the phone lines and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osier here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. It was on this date in 1983. The United States Football League began its first ever player draft, collegiate player draft. Of course, they had the system where you had territorial rights to a lot of schools. For instance, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, or the Tampa Bay Bandits, I should say, had the rights to Florida State and Florida and several other schools as well. So I guess it depended on who you were lucky enough to end up with the rights to. But so those players were not in the overall draft. You remember John Osier, because you're a little bit older than Fat Tony. Who was the first player selected in the USFL inaugural draft? What do you got? Anything?
Yeah.
What year was this?
83.
Marino.
Dan Marino. Bing, 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 bing. Tony's like, I am young and smart.
That's good.
Is what I am.
Yeah.
Dan Marino got selected by the LA Express. Back then, he never played for them, right. Obviously. Then Tim Spencer got picked by the Chicago Blitz. He did play for them. Reggie Collier got selected by Birmingham out of Southern Mississippi. He played
did
for
play,
them.
Yep.
Craig James went and played with the Washington Generals. He was the fourth pick. Gary Anderson got selected by the New Jersey Generals. Oh. And then I think he went to the Bandits, right? Did he play for both, or did he get traded to the Bandits?
I'm not sure, but
he did play in the USFL.
He was a star under Spurrier in Tampa Bay.
He was, that absolutely. Was big, yeah. Eric Dickerson was the sixth overall pick. He opted to go play in the National Football League. Billy Ray Smith was the seventh overall pick, and he played for the San Diego Chargers instead. Irv Eatman, though, went to the Philadelphia Stars out of UCLA. Demetrius Johnson, don't remember him much, a defensive back out of Missouri, was the ninth pick, and the tenth pick by the Michigan Panthers was Dave Greenwood, a defensive back out of Wisconsin. So those
good
were
players played in the USFL.
They really did. Reggie White played in the USFL. Jim Kelly played in the USFL. There were a lot of superstar-type players that played in the United States Football League.
Steve Young.
Steve Young, no doubt about it. I mean,
Gary Clark.
A bunch of them.
Yeah.
Gary Clark?
Gary Clark played here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't recall Gary Clark as much.
Played in Jacksonville.
I guess you're probably right about that. 1985, the Cowboys played at the time their record 36th postseason game. But speaking of Eric Dickerson, he stole the show that day. He ran for a playoff record 248 yards and two touchdowns to lead the L.A. Rams to a 20-0 victory over the Dallas Cowboys. Probably Tony Romo's fault. Famous birthdays for this date. Happy 87th to the winningest coach in NFL history, Don Shula. Makes a mean steak. At least they do at his restaurants. He was born in the state in 1930. Former Florida State quarterback and broadcaster Peter Tom Willis, born in the state in 1967. He's 50, spent 4 years with the Bears. Garrison Hurst, a former Georgia Bulldog, born in the state in 1971, two-time Pro Bowler. He's 46 years old. And Eric Weddle, the defensive back who could have been a Jag, but instead ended up with the Baltimore Ravens. Three-time Pro Bowler. He's 32 years old today, born in the state in 1985. This state in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, conveniently located on Gate Parkway. If you need a family dentist or maybe some cosmetic work done, call the same number, 620-9225. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com. You get a complete list of all of their available comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Detroit Lions have confirmed that Jim Caldwell will be returning as their head coach next year. Caldwell has now made the playoffs with the Lions in two of his first three seasons as their head coach. They did lose on Sunday night in Detroit to rival Green Bay to see their first division championship since 1993 slip away. Caldwell has 1 year left on his four-year deal. Offensive coordinator Jim Bob Cooter could be a candidate to be a head coach somewhere in the near future. Maybe the Lions could feel like they're in a situation after next season where they either have to promote Jim Bob to head coach or risk losing him entirely. Seattle has signed Devin Hester, presumably to return punts and kickoffs during their playoff run. Hester spent the first 14 weeks this season with Baltimore before being released. He averaged 7.2 yards per punt return, good enough for 17th in the league before he was let go. Houston has announced that Brock Osweiler will get the start this Saturday against Oakland. The Texans are also expecting to get back running back Lamar Miller, who has missed the last 2 weeks with an ankle injury. According to Alex Marvez of Fox Sports, the Denver head coaching job is Vance Joseph's to lose. Joseph is the current defensive coordinator for the Miami Dolphins. He was a consideration for the defensive coordinator job in Denver a couple of years ago before they brought on Wade Phillips. Also, Eli Manning doing his best to deflect some of the attention that has been placed upon his wide receiver group, who decided to spend the off day after beating Washington down in South Beach, hanging out with Justin Bieber on yachts, doing all kinds of stuff. Eli Manning, addressing the media yesterday, said, quote, "I think as a team we always pride ourselves on being well prepared. So when I saw some of those pictures, I was a little disappointed. Just because obviously they didn't pack accordingly. They didn't have any shirts, kind of long pants, no shorts, no flip-flops or anything. All the players were photographed with their shirts off on a boat somewhere."
All right, there you go. Here's one from I'm Bill McNeil on Twitter.
Says, my guy Bill.
Hiring Mike Smith is the equivalent of saying you'll conduct a search for the best defensive coordinator available and then hiring Todd Wash.
Well, no, it's
he's
not.
He's not impressed with Mike Smith.
Okay, that's fine. And that is a perception out there, but it's an incorrect perception.
Well, look, Mike Smith had more success than any head coach in the history of the Atlanta Falcons, right? For a sustained success.
Won a lot of games.
Won a lot of games. Didn't make it to the ultimate prize, but a lot of coaches don't.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know how Bill specifically feels about this, but don't talk about wanting a proven head coach and be disappointed if you get Mike Smith.
Right, because he's certainly more proven right. than Josh McDaniels.
Right. So if that's not what you want, that's fine. But if you want a proven head coach, then don't say that and then say, well, that's an uninspired hiring. It's not.
Well, look, I understand inspired hiring is in the eyes of the beholder.
Precisely.
Right. So you can say that guy wants to say he's uninspired by the hiring of Mike Smith. That's fine.
Right. But if that's the case, then he doesn't want a proven head coach.
Well, he may want a proven head coach that has a little more pizzazz to him. You know, okay. I mean, Tom Coughlin maybe would not have a ton of pizzazz in other markets, although two Super Bowl victories carries a lot of weight with it, but he'd certainly have pizzazz here. John Gruden is a proven head coach who would certainly get people excited. I'm not saying he's a realistic candidate to return to coaching, period, never mind in the city of Jacksonville. So there can be different levels in every category, I suppose.
But there's no question that the Mike Smith hiring, if that indeed happens, would not have the, you know, a wow factor. But that's okay.
It's okay if he wins.
Right.
Right.
But in fact, a coach with a wow factor isn't very good if he doesn't win either.
Granted. I understand that. But, maybe some people feel that Josh McDaniels or Kyle Shanahan would do just as well as Mike Smith and add what they feel is a wow factor. To each your own. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
You've got to pick the coach that you believe is going to win the most without regard to the wow factor.
Okay. For the most part, I agree with that.
Because if you're picking a guy for wow factor that you're not sure is going to win.
Well, that's the thing. Right. If you've got two guys that are close, do you pick the guy that you think is as steady as she goes, or do you pick the guy that you think will also impact you at the box office? Because it is a business.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. Look, I have my preferences, but my preference is that the Jaguars win a lot of football games.
Right.
That is the number one preference I have. So nobody knows how. Tom Coughlin could come in. I could be dead wrong. They could go 4-12 under Tom Coughlin.
Is there any element of this? And I don't know. And it's kind of a public perception thing. There's this feeling of, okay, Doug Marrone as the interim coach wouldn't bring a lot of pizzazz factor. And Mike Smith would need it. Is that because they've been here before, or is it just because of what?
I think, you know, first of all, if you put it this way, let's say Doug Marrone had spent the last few years as someone else's offensive line coach.
Right.
Okay? And their offensive line had been what the Jags' offensive line's been for the last couple of years.
Right.
Okay? And it's been not a great team,
sure.
not a lot of winning, but he still has his resume from Buffalo. Would you be excited? I mean, would he even be a candidate here in Jacksonville? Would he be?
Right, perhaps.
Maybe he would. Maybe he wouldn't. You know, but I think outside of the connection with the fact that he's been on this coaching staff, look, Doug Marrone has a good reputation around the league. There's been some talk that he could get interviews in other places this offseason. That's yet to materialize. So I just don't know. But I think that factors into it. Just Doug Marrone is just not, you know, doesn't mean he would be a bad choice. He just, I don't think, would be a sexy pick. And I think the fact that he is in part responsible. I mean, he was coaching this team as well in his own capacity. Was the offensive line great? They were better this year. You know, did they distinguish themselves as a unit? I don't know.
Right.
You know, I don't. Other than the fact that he was here, what makes him a guy you'd have high on the list of candidates for Jacksonville, I guess?
Yeah.
You know?
I think he's got a better chance than people think.
How good of a chance? I mean,
you think
he's in the top two or three candidates?
Yeah, I'd say he's in. I don't think he's four or five. I mean, if I was ranked, I'd say Smith and Marrone and Shanahan, that bunch, feel like.
Is it, how much of this is because of Caldwell's familiarity working on with these guys in the past?
That never hurts. You know, I mean, a familiarity is always going to give you an edge going in. So,
but as
that's,
you know,
probably
as,
why I. That's probably why, if I'm handicapping, that's why I put them there. I don't know if that translates into the real decision or not.
As Dave himself said, Dave Caldwell said, you know, and a comment that I thought was widely misinterpreted, you know, talking about comfort level. He didn't have a comfort level with Gus Bradley prior to getting to know him.
Right.
Because he had no relationship with him, no working relationship.
Which is what he was saying. He was not saying he wasn't comfortable with the hire.
I totally agree with you on that. And I think it got misinterpreted by a large section of fans out there.
And then what are you saying? And what will happen is at some point over the next 10 days, the decision-making heads of this organization – are going to be in rooms with the potential head coach. And as happened in 2013 with Gus, that's when the dynamics and the tornado going forward is going to start. That's when it starts. Everything up until then is speculation. The dynamics and the direction of the organization start once they get in those rooms with those guys.
All right, let's get another call in here. DJ and Mandarin next up at 641-1010. Good morning, DJ.
Hey, good morning. Happy New Year. Hey,
Happy New Year.
I just wanted to make a comment of, you know, I know a lot of guys want coaches with experience, but I'm open to new coordinators. I just think Gus was just the wrong coordinator. You know, I look at the Mike Tomlin. He was on a D coordinator for 1 year. The John Harbaughs, the McCarthy's in Green Bay. You know, and it don't have to be an offensive. Mike Tomlin, look what Mike Tomlin did. You know, he was a defensive guy, but then he kept working the process. He hired Tom Haley, and the Steelers been offensive, scoring all these points for the last few years. So you just got to get the right guy. This whole recycle, it works only on a couple of occasions. You know, the Belichick and the Pete Carroll is recent. But the John Harbaughs, man, of the world, man, you got to get these guys a shot. You know what I'm saying? So I just don't want to admit that. I don't want all the talk to be about recycled coaches.
Right. And I agree with that. Hire the best coach. The problem is defining who is the best coach.
And that's the challenge.
You don't know until they've been in the job for a while. When you say guys need a shot, this is not – I don't look at this job as, hey, let's give somebody a shot. No. Gus Bradley got a shot. That's why I think – you're hearing a lot of talk about guys with previous experience because you can point to the Mike Tomlins of the world. We can all remember the successes.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably a bunch of coordinators that got first-time gigs that you're like, wow, man, what
and
a horrible decision that was.
There's failures with past head coaches, too.
Absolutely, there are.
It's, but I think you have to get the right guy, and it's hard.
Sure you do. But I think if there's going to be an adjustment period to being, you know, and maybe with Shanahan because of the familial relations it doesn't impact him as much. But if there's an adjustment period of a year or so into what it entails to take on the duties of a head coach, at least even with a guy who has failed before and been fired, he's been through it. You know, he's had kind of the exposure to it and had the opportunity to learn from some past mistakes.
I think they're really looking for that, really looking for it. And again, like I said earlier, my guess is, you know, in an interview process, there's got to be something in the front of Shad's mind, right? I mean, you know, that you're really looking for. If the guy doesn't have that experience, my guess is he's really, really looking and asking questions, trying to figure out, okay, what does this guy have that's going to help me be sure that that lack of experience is going to not be a factor? I mean, I think he's really looking for that head coaching, even beyond the coordinator, play calling, dynamic, all that stuff. Does he have that head coach leadership feel? I don't even know what – it's a very vague thing I'm describing.
I think you have – whatever it is and it is vague, you have to have the ability to come in and take this team and hit the ground running.
Right.
Is what I – and there's no on-the-job training. There's not an on-the-job training job anymore. I understood why it could be when you're stripping down the roster to nothing and building it back up and we can all learn together, and it didn't work, okay? Yeah. Not saying it can't ever work, but I don't think this team can afford to go through another on-the-job training cycle with a head coach.
I don't think you're – and this may not define it well either, but I don't think you're going to hear the phrase developmental coaching staff, which you heard with this one.
Right.
So that won't be there. So you've got to – whatever that definition is, that's not what they'll be looking for.
All right, let's take a timeout here. We'll come back. Let's go through the 15 finalists and who we would cast our votes for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Also, some interesting comments this week from Blake Bortles about his mechanics and what he needs to work on this offseason. So we'll get into that as well coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osier here with you. It's Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at EverBank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Joined now by Mr. Vic Carucci with the Buffalo News, longtime NFL writer and Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, former Pro Football Writers Association of America president. Tony Boselli makes the semifinal list once again. Do you get the sense that there is any momentum for Boselli, whether it happens for him this year? Do you think it will be happening for him sometime in the next several years?
I think it's got to happen for him because he is a Hall of – he meets the criteria. He is a Hall of Fame player in my mind.
That's Vic Carucci. Yeah, Vic Carucci is probably as respected as pretty much any writer that covers the National Football League.
There's 20, 25 guys who every other writer listens to when they talk. Rick Goslin's in the group from Dallas. I mean, there's a bunch of guys – very respected, and Vic's of that group, and I'm telling you, a lot of those guys are either in the camp or very, very open to listening to the argument for Tony Boselli.
Do you think if you didn't have the connection to Jacksonville, do you think Boselli would be one of your top five candidates?
That's
tough to quantify.
Yeah, I mean, if I've never been in the position where there's a process these guys go through, and I've been around it and I respect it. The voters that I know take it very seriously, where they talk to a lot of people. I was around Mike Chappell in Indianapolis, who has a vote. He would make it a point to sit down with Bill Polian before every Hall of Fame. And this was before Bill got in. He was the president of the Colts, to try to talk to him about each candidate and try to get information on what was the league thought on him when he was in the league. Was this guy better than this guy? Not taking what Bill said as gospel, but trying to have the conversation with as many people as possible and get information. So I'd like to think I would do that. And when Boselli's argument gets in front of you, the more you look at the fact that the big one to me, member of the All-Decades team in the 90s, only player on offense, not in.
Right.
All-decade guys tend to get in.
Of course, Leroy Butler's been waiting for quite a while.
And I think Leroy should be in.
I mean, he doesn't even get a sniff.
Which is amazing to me. And some guys don't for some reason. It starts happening. Some guys don't. That's a strong argument to me. Three all pros is a strong argument. And the fact, again, that when you talk to players who played with him, he's one of those guys that players will say, you know what, he was as good as anybody ever played.
All right, so who would your five be?
If I was voting, I would go Bocelli, T.O., L.T. I'd probably put T.D. in because it feels like it's time. And again, this is off the top of my head. And I'm going to go B-Doc because I covered him in high school.
Okay. That's fine.
And I think he's legit. You know,
I think most of these guys, like Kevin Mawai would be a shock if he got in to me.
This year. I think Kevin Mawai had a good,
he was an outstanding player. I just look at him compared. He's not even the third best offensive line prospect in this group.
Right. Does anybody make an argument? I mean, there are arguments when you hear people talk about Bocelli. There are people who talk about him being as good as anybody who ever played the position.
Anthony Munoz will tell you that himself.
So I don't. Again, I haven't had Kevin Mawai.
I'm just using that as an example,
but I don't think you hear that as much.
Brian Dawkins, John Lynch, those guys shouldn't shock you if they get in the next couple of years. Shouldn't shock you if they get in this year.
Yeah, it's at some point safeties need to be in. It's an important position, and there's not many of them in. Butler and Dawkins are guys who need to be in the conversation and need to be close to the door.
We say that that. With the safeties and the defense, I'm so offensively biased with this particular list. Tony, who is your five-man list that you would
just
for?
Real quick, 20 years ago today, a listener actually tweeted this into me, and I
Jags
checked
Denver.
Just to make sure. Yeah, Jags Denver in 1997, that divisional round matchup. And the
almost
biggest,
might have included that in this date in football history.
It might massive.
Have. Might have.
Massive.
We talk about it all the time.
Yeah. But my five. LT at the top. That guy's got an argument as a Mount Rushmore running back. That's how good he was. Terrell Owens, Kurt Warner, Tony Bocelli, and Don Coryell. And that's the order.
Coryell would be my six. I'd vote for Coryell if I didn't vote for Bocelli.
I was just looking.
Game changer.
Yeah, I was just looking at Coryell's stats as a head coach. He was a head coach for 14 years, never had a passing offense below seventh rated. In his 14 years in the NFL, that includes his first couple years when he was bringing all that stuff into the league, never had a below seventh, nine consecutive years where he had the number one or two passing offense in the league.
And he was with the Cardinals in the early 70s, mid-70s, 74, 75. He changed it.
Had to take that San Diego team coming off an overtime victory in South Florida to Cincinnati where it was about 40 below wind chill the next week, I think he would have been potentially at least a Super Bowl coach, if not a Super Bowl winner.
Remember, he was Eric Coryell before and after the rules changes in 78.
Oh, it's what a fun group of players they had.
With the Cardinals, this was before the rules changes.
Understood.
Big-time difference. And one in both eras. Winning in two different eras in this league is not easy.
My five would be, because I would not have Coryell in the five, I would have four of the same ones as Tony. I'd have LT and T.O. to me are the top two on the list. I would vote for Bocelli because I would vote for Bocelli, and if you don't like it, you don't have to. I would vote for Kurt Warner because and over Terrell Davis because, to me, Kurt Warner, when I write the story of the NFL, and I get it, Terrell Davis was instrumental. He was an MVP. You can make a lot of the same arguments. To me, Kurt Warner is part of the fabric of the story of the NFL, much like Joe Namath isn't in the Hall of Fame just on his statistics.
Right.
I don't think Kurt Warner's story is
his
part
99
of the
story
history
and
league.
That Rams 99 story may never be repeated.
No.
To have a guy come out of nowhere and take a team out of nowhere and dominate the way they did, you don't see sea changes in the NFL like they made that year.
My fifth would be Alan Faneca. I'm trying to guess how many Pro Bowls Alan Faneca went through.
I think
through. Nine Pro Bowls.
He must have been nice to you at the Super Bowl one year.
No. I don't know if I've ever interviewed. I think I might have interviewed Alan Faneca. I just think Alan Faneca was one of those guys every year that was at the top of his position.
Yeah.
And I think those Pro Bowls were largely deserved. And I do think there is something to once you get in the rotation, it's easier to stay in the rotation. And that's what hurt Fred. Fred Taylor can never
Absolutely.
Crack the ceiling. You look at Fred, though, critically. I don't think Fred got screwed most of the years. I know it's not a popular opinion, maybe in Jacksonville. But if you look every year, you look at the running backs the AFC had back then.
Circumstances hurt him. In 2000, I think it was 2000, Fred Taylor was the best running back in the NFL in 2000. But he was hurt early. This is the last year I covered him, so I'm sort of passionate about his season. It was the year he went for the record against Pittsburgh, and it was the year he had nine straight 100-yard games. He was phenomenal. He's best running back in the league. But he was hurt the first two games and had very limited action in the third game against the Colts. So what happened was, had the voting for the Pro Bowl been done after the season that year, he makes it.
Right.
When the voting took place, he was fourth or fifth in the NFL in rushing, in the AFC. And if memory serves, he was behind three really good players, but he was
probably
not
like
that
Clinton
top.
Portis, he had Priest Holmes back then. But he had a lot of these guys.
It was hard to really make the argument that he should have been a Pro Bowler that year, but he was clearly, he was phenomenal that year. And I'm sure after I left, I didn't cover him after that, but there were other years. His rookie year, he could have been a Pro Bowler, but and had a phenomenal rookie year. He never really got shafted out of the Pro Bowl, but he was clearly one of the best running backs in the league during that time. And the totality of his numbers, there's no way to me that he's not eventually a semifinalist type level running back in terms of what he did in the league.
That year, Edgerrin James ran for 1,700 yards.
Edge and
led the league.
Edge at that point was elite. He hadn't hurt his knee yet.
Robert Smith in the NFC was next, so he doesn't count. Eddie Georgio had over 1,500 yards. Mike Anderson had 1,487 yards for the Denver Broncos.
And had a phenomenal year that year.
Right, he did. Right. And then Corey Dillon had 1,435 yards. All four of those guys in the AFC alone finish ahead of Fred Taylor.
And Fred finished really fast. At the time of the voting, Fred was not among that. I think he finished a 1,399, if I recall.
1,399,
okay,
right.
I pulled that out of my head. But at the time of the voting, I was covering the beat, and he should have been in, but it wasn't just this phenomenal oversight. And it happened, I think, several times in his career.
Right. There was maybe a year or two where I felt like he might have been slighted, but most years it wasn't the same guys year after year.
Right.
It was different guys in the AFC.
And I think he should be in the Hall. Don't get me wrong. But
I understand what you're saying.
That certainly hurts him.
It does, and he may one day make it into the Hall of Fame. Let me see if I can find. Tony, you got this year's rushing leaders handy?
Here hang on.
Yeah, you got two guys in the league this year that have rushed for 1,300 yards. Right? You had Ezekiel Elliott with over 1,600, and then Jordan Howard, second, with 1,313, which, by the way, I believe is the first time two rookies have finished 1-2.
Really?
Since they've been keeping rushing stats, because
they
didn't keep rushing stats the first few years of the league. I don't know why that is. Somebody brought this up to me yesterday. The first year they did the research on, they think that that's right. That
I'm surprised by that, because usually rookies come in and make a quick, like,
right at that position,
Edge,
more so than any
Edge
other.
Edge led the league in rushing as a rookie. I know Dickerson, I think, did.
But then you'd have to have that
second guy
there as well. So you had two guys. The point is, you had two guys that ran for 1,300 yards this year. Go back to 2000, and all I've got in front of me is the list of the top 10, and they all ran for over 1,300 yards.
Right.
Just in 15, 16 years, how much that has changed.
Well, you had, I don't think it's so much the advent of the passing game as much as you just don't see teams using one primary guy anymore. So
that's a big part of it, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at
that. It'd be really special.
After Fred, Jamal Lewis, Marshall Faulk, Jerome Bettis, and Steven Davis round out the top 10. And 13, 18 it took to get into the top 10 back then. That'd be number two in the league. All 10 of those guys would be no worse than second in the league if that total was transported ahead. We'll come back. Interesting article on ESPN.com. Mike DiRocco writing up. I'm sure you've heard Blake talk about his relationship with his quarterback's coach, Tom House, as well as how Greg Olsen felt about that. We'll talk about some of the comments Blake made this week on that, and we'll look at some of the fans and listeners' votes for the Hall of Fame as well. I would imagine almost universal voting for Tony Boselli, but that's why we asked the question today, as Big Bo made the finalists.
If it ain't Bo, you don't know.
Yeah, you know what? You don't have to vote for Tony Boselli. You may not think he's one of the most deserving. We didn't ask who the most deserving are. We asked who your ballot would be. That would be our ballots. We just laid out there the five that would get our votes. I think John Lynch is going to get a lot of love. He always does. And look, he piled up the accolades and things like that.
He was a key player on a good defense for a long time.
Right. What do you think of John Lynch as more, a Buck or a Bronco?
A Buck. I do.
Do you? Probably do, too.
I
had to look.
He was a core guy on Super Bowl win. I mean, I think people think of Sapp, Lynch, and Brooks as the Bucks era. and they won a Super Bowl and had a lot of really good teams for 5 years.
Yeah, so. All right. Anyway, you can weigh in on that. Continue to on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and at John Osier. And we'll check in on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Somebody on Twitter, Danny, says all three of you guys should reconsider leaving Isaac Bruce out of your Hall of Fame ballot is just wrong. Look, you only get to vote for five, right? And I've been saying truly for years, as long as I've been doing shows where the conversation about Jimmy Smith as the Hall of Fame candidate has come up, Isaac Bruce has been the single guy I've said that is the bellwether. Until he gets in, right. Jimmy doesn't have a prayer. I heard Jeff Prosser this morning dismiss Isaac Bruce like he wasn't in Jimmy Smith's class. I was shocked, quite frankly.
There's not many receivers where Bruce doesn't sit in the same class.
Explain to me where Isaac Bruce took any back seat to Jimmy Smith. And that's not a knock on Jimmy. We all feel Jimmy was a great player. Isaac Bruce has better numbers across the board.
Right. I think Jimmy at some point deserves to be in the room, but
absolutely
not before Isaac Bruce.
Isaac Bruce.
Maybe the same time.
Had a lot more yardage, and he didn't just compile. It didn't just pile it up. Really, if you take out his last couple of years when he was almost a figurehead out there.
Right.
His numbers look even better compared to Jimmy on his per-catch averages.
Right.
Per game, they're about identical. And that's what Bruce, towards the end of his career, you know, his last year,
Jimmy
had
10
like 36
straight
yards
years that were phenomenal. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I mean, they're very similar. Because Jimmy had 10 straight years that were absolutely phenomenal and phenomenally consistent. Where, again, I think he's another guy that if voters and people would dust off the reality of it and really parse through Jimmy Smith's career, I think the consideration would be a lot more serious.
And I think the one big thing that Isaac Bruce, whether it's fair or not, and he had a lot of great years in a row too, but the 1781, 1338, 815, then he was hurt. At the 815 year, he missed four games, and then he only played five games in 98. He had hamstring issues early in his career. Then he went 1165, 1471, 1106, 1075, 981, 1292. He was same guy as Jimmy. Scored a lot more touchdowns. He starred in a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl and was a big contributor to that victory. Is that Jimmy's fault? No, but it's on the resume for Isaac Bruce. Super Bowl champ, 162 receiving yards and a game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl for the greatest show on turf.
If you're running highlight reels of the top 50 plays in NFL history, Bruce is going to be on one of them.
Yeah, you would think, right.
The touchdown he caught,
the bomb from
it was a defining NFL moment.
Right. So, look, again, be happy that Isaac Bruce is a finalist. Because Isaac Bruce needs to get in before Jimmy Smith. Torrey Holt probably needs to get in before Jimmy
Smith. And
just because
I didn't put him in a top five, I think Isaac Bruce is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
I think he'll get in eventually, right?
Yeah.
But, he's going to have to wait. In fact, you know, we were just talking about it on the break. I was a little surprised that Torrey Holt didn't get the nod ahead of Isaac Bruce because he's been to a lot more Pro Bowls.
Yeah.
I think the common perception is that Torrey Holt was a better player than Isaac Bruce. You may disagree with that.
Sure.
I'm not even saying that's my perception. I just think that's more – if you ask people who is the better receiver on those teams, they'd say more people would say Torrey Holt. The fact that Torrey Holt didn't even get to the finalists this year indicates to me they're continuing at that position to play the waiting game. You wait your turn because until this guy gets in, the next guy's not getting in. Until Harrison got in, T.O.'s not going to get in, even though I thought T.O. deserved it more than Marvin Harrison.
Which that's the part of the system that I don't love, but it's there.
All right. A couple of quick comments that we saw from Blake Bortles in a nutshell. Paraphrasing here, and Mike DiRocco wrote this up. I know, I'm sure you've talked about this, John, as well, that Greg Olsen didn't really see eye to eye with the way that Tom House taught mechanics. Is that what you took away from that?
My understanding was it was more of just, I don't know if it was anything against particularly what House taught as much as just sort of wanting the a work to be in-house.
The philosophy of getting outside help as opposed to do. But here's the problem with that. You can only work in-house
Again, I never talked to Greg specifically about it, but that's the vibe that I got, if that makes sense.
Mike
having talked to Blake about it, what Blake said is far more of a fact than what I'm saying.
What Blake, you know, talked about the fact that he needs, from, again, I'm paraphrasing here, constant reinforcement on his mechanics, he feels. He needs that extra set of eyes. He said the only difference in terms of how much he worked this offseason was he didn't work under the tutelage
Correct.
Of one of those guys. So while he was throwing as much, and he was throwing to his own Right. receivers, which he thought would help develop chemistry, and you would think that that makes logical Right. sense, he didn't have somebody there after every rep saying, hey, your foot was not in the right position Right. here, or your elbow's dropping,
I think,
or
that's
whatever.
What he learned last offseason.
That he needs that.
He talked a lot late last offseason about wanting to work with the receivers, wanting to do that. I think it was fantastic in its intent. And I think he learned early this season and maybe even in preseason of, whoa, that didn't work out like I thought it was going to. Maybe I worked in the wrong area. But there's this perception that he didn't work last offseason. I think that's incorrect. I think it was misfocused.
Right. It was a different kind of work. Here's one quote from Bortles. There was a difference in beliefs between Ole, Greg Olsen, and the guys I throw with out in California. They'd had a previous interaction and disagreed on some things, so he was a little negative of them, but he was totally supportive of what I wanted to do. But all of our wide receivers were here in Jacksonville, so he thought it was a good idea. And to me, it seemed like a good idea as well to come in here and throw with those guys. So it seems like some elements of both. Like he's saying he thought it would be more beneficial to work Right. with your guys, but at the same time, Yeah. there may have been some fundamental disagreements.
And again, remember, in OTAs and early in training camp, it wasn't like the ball was sailing all over the place with Blake. It wasn't like he didn't look like a mess. You guys saw a little bit too.
Yeah.
You know, in OTAs and early in training camp, you weren't sitting there going, oh my goodness, this is just accurate. That wasn't there. It sort of started happening after that third preseason game on into the regular season. So lesson learned, you hope. And he talked the other day, Blake did, about learning what he needs to do to prepare. And I think he knows that what he needs to do to prepare is to be in California with those guys. More than he was.
Excuse me, Tony. Hall of Fame ballots people have submitted. What did we get?
Yeah, we just got a couple here. But from Jarrell, he said Don Anthony, Baselli, T.O., L.T., John Lynch, and Alan Faneca. We had a couple others. T.O., L.T. on every ballot. Baselli on every ballot, at least that we received. Some of the other names that we did get, we got a couple with Don Coryell that got mentioned on there, a couple with Brian Dawkins being the local connection as well.
Here are some of the ones, the ballots, very similar to ours in many cases. In fact, on Facebook, Terrell Owens, LT, Faneca, Dawkins, and Baselli was one from Josh, and then another Joshua went with LT, T.O., Warner, Lynch, and Baselli, and he advocates for a Jacksonville-Tampa Hall of Fame game if the field is playable. You don't want to get your guys hurt. Skyler voted Tony, and yes, Tony in the last spot. Ronald Davis went with T.O., Brian Dawkins, L.T., Baselli, and Morton Anderson. That'd be two Jaguars in the Hall of Fame in the same class. That'd be nice. And then finally, you'll enjoy this one, John. I think you'll love this one, as a matter of fact. Connor said Tony Baselli, Terrell Owens, Jeff Loggeman, David Garrard, and because he's in the room, Tyler Devitt.
I like that.
You didn't think he was going to say you, did you?
I thought he was going to say Ryan O'Hara.
You thought, well, he's not in the room.
That's right. Well,
maybe O'Hara would have gotten a vote.
Guess what? Neither is Tyler.
He's back in the control room.
Yeah, well, he's in that room.
He's in the audio room. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
See, he's right there.
Okay.
Hall of Fame nominee,
right.
Tyler Devitt.
So I'm behind Devitt now. That's just great.
Tyler, can I book you for, let's say, Wednesday morning on Radio Row in Houston this year? Can we get you on? Are you going to be available?
No, just doing national radio only, Mike. Sorry about that.
Damn, just national this year.
Yes.
All right, well.
How about
Sirius? Can I get you on Sirius?
Only on Mad Dog Radio, sorry.
Oh, only on Mad Dog Radio. Well, that makes sense as well. So Tyler's picky, as he should be. All right. Oach, what are you writing about in the next few days?
Just some season wrap-up stuff. I got to be honest. It's a outside the ozone, slow week.
And holding pattern, right?
Just sort of waiting for that coaching change to heat up.
Yep. What timetable? What do you expect? Next week sometime, maybe? Or
A lot of it depends on who the candidate is. Meaning, if it's indeed Mike Smith, then maybe early next week. If it's not, and you're waiting on guys,
right? If you really like Shanahan, you might have to wait a few weeks.
Yeah,
to find
then it
out.
Sort of plays out differently. I think we'll start getting a better idea report wise over the weekend, early next week.
Do you, like, for instance, if a team makes the Super Bowl, you can interview them again in the week after the championship game. Okay, you can have a second interview. I, this is true.
Right.
Okay? So, do you get? Let's say they interview McDaniels or Shanahan, right? And one of these guys advances to the Super Bowl. Do you think they'll have a strong indication that there's the mutual interest? You know what I mean?
I would guess. You would think it would have to play out sort of like the Dan Quinn thing did, where it was clear.
We're, right. This will be our guy. Let's start putting a proposed staff together.
Yeah, because it's just tough. It's tough to not
it,
know.
It'd be tough to wait. Like, if it were you and another team, and the guy picks the other team, then you're left holding the bag at that point, right?
That feels like very nice in theory, very difficult in reality.
All right. So we'll see. The timetable will be what the timetable is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful from a personal standpoint that it's next week, late next week. I think there's a chance of that. We'll see.
All right. John, thank you, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you soon. John Osier, at John Osier, who I think is heading to Houston, right? You guys are going to do some stuff for .com for the website?
Yeah, I mean, and
Super Bowl.
A big part of it is we sort of thought that Big Bo would be at this stage. So we want to be out there in case that happens.
All right. We'll look forward to seeing you out there as
well. Can't wait.
All right. John Osier just missed the cut for the final five into the Hall of Fame in 2017. That'll do it for us. For Frat Tony, for John Osier, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato. Thanks to our friends at Metro Rooter. They bring you the show every week for any size plumbing job, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, you name it. Our Wednesday sponsor, same day service, weekends included. You got a problem, you don't want to be waiting around. That pipe is leaking, you need the fix right now. Metro Rooter is on the case. The right people with the right equipment. Simple formula. That's why they've been serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area so well since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911 for our friends at Metro Rooter. They're the people I trust to take care of all my plumbing issues in my home. You can trust them as well. Our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Coming up next, the Midday Chalk at the top of the hour. Stick around on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. Lunchtime just about here. Oh, my goodness, that whistle's going to blow. And you're going to head to your car and you're going to go, my goodness, do I want to wait all my lunchtime in the drive-thru at the local fast food place? Of course the answer to that is no. First of all, you're going to get some greasy, heavy food, and you're going to be taking a nap in the middle of the afternoon. You might not mind taking a nap, but you probably don't want to fall asleep at work if that's not in the plans. Dandy, you're going to get some fresh food, light and filling, and it gets you on your way. Going to give you some high energy. You're going to pay a price that puts a smile on your face. You just pop into your local Kangaroo Express or Circle K and choose from the many outstanding varieties of Dandy sandwiches and subs. The Anytime Deli line, the breakfast sliders, the new light lunchtime wraps that they rolled out in 2016. And just wait to see what they have in the works for 2017 as well. But the classics are always a great standby. Food on the go, no matter what the occasion. You know the name. Whenever you're hungry for food on the go, make yours a Dandy and go out and do it today.
You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
You guys have a good day. Peace.